Welcome to this Knowledge on the Nordics podcast with me, Nicola Whitcomb, editor of the research dissemination website Nordics Info. In today's podcast, we're going to be talking about the Women's International Democratic Federation, which was founded in Paris in 1945 and at its height included women's organisations from more than 100 countries. It has been argued that it was one, if not the most, influential women's organisations of the post-World War II era. But this was also a controversial organisation, full of contradictions. Many people saw it as being in the pocket of the Soviet Union, but at the same time it provided women from the Nordic region with an opportunity to importantly meet women from the Global South. It provided them with a kind of mouthpiece in speaking out against war and in numerous other political debates, both on a domestic level and abroad, in the name of global female solidarity. Yulia Gradskova, Associate Professor and Researcher in History at Södertörn University, has written a book called The Women's International Democratic Federation, The Global South and the Cold War, Defending the Rights of Women of the Whole World. She speaks Russian, Spanish, English and Swedish, and I interviewed her on the 24th of February 2022, the day that Russia invaded Ukraine, which meant that we were both rather distracted. But at the same time, it gave a kind of pathos to our discussions, which were naturally littered with references to the two opposing sides during the Cold War. So thanks very much, Yulia, for being with us today. Before we start, can you please just explain why it's important to study organisations like the Women's International Democratic Federation?
This opens up possibility to understand the events like women's rights or Cold War like from a new perspective, because sometimes this national paradigm is so dominant, so we just think, okay, it was this development, this law, this political party, but basically we cannot think about development, at least in the 20th century, I think, and many centuries before that also. The development of political ideas, legislation, it does not happen so isolated. Nation states, political leaders, different groups, organizations, they are very much looking around. They are trying to read what is accessible to read or to listen or to exchange ideas. How it is in other places, maybe something could be learned, something could be brought in. So when we stop looking just from the perspective of the nation state, and start to look a little bit broader, we almost always will find like something which was going on, exchange of ideas, like connections between people and human encounters. I think that human encounters are also very, very interesting and they are influential.
And just briefly, before we go into the main body of the podcast, I guess you also have an interesting perspective, being Russian and having lived in Sweden for many years. Could you just give a quick overview of your background?
I graduated from Moscow State University, and my major was Latin American history, modern and contemporary history, and history of Latin America. And then everything have changed after the breakdown of the Soviet Union, beginning of democratization. So there were possibilities to study some new topics. And among them, it was possibility to study Soviet history, real history, not like this official variant of history. It was not very interesting to study Soviet history before. But after that, the new possibilities appeared, and also the new ideas like gender, concept of gender history.
Yeah, so I know you've lived in Sweden for many years, but what originally took you to Sweden?
So it was very interesting to understand how Soviet history, global history would be approached from the newest theoretical perspectives, and they were not accessible in Russia, of course. Well, I mean, some books were translated. It was a long process, but of course, I was very interested in learning something new and having this perspective of distance also, which I think sometimes is very helpful when you are doing research on contemporary history.
So let's set the scene for the Women's International Democratic Federation. When it started, it wasn't the first international organization for women, was it? There were a number of other organizations, including three important ones: the International Alliance for Women's Suffrage, the International Council of Women, and the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. How did these organizations work?
They were really grassroots organizations which were created by women from different countries. So this story already existed when the WIDF came into the scene.
So again, to set the scene for when this organization started in 1945, perhaps you can take us back and tell us what the world looked like then.
Europe was in ruins in many places. Most of the world was still, they were colonies, yes, dependent territories. It was somehow easy to organize it also at the end of the Second World War, when there were so many expectations about peace, about mutual cooperation, when it was the new structures of global governance, as UN, for example, that were on the way to be created and developed. So it was easy for this organization somehow, comparing with the three older organizations.
Turning then to the Women's International Democratic Federation, could you explain a bit of its relationship with the Soviet Union? Because as far as I understand it, it was firmly on the political left, feminist and radical.
I would say that Soviet support was, of course, very big. But on the other hand, there were many different women, not only communist women. So not all of them were communist. Some of them just considered that in this situation, post-war situation, it is an opportunity to develop cooperation for women.
So was it payrolled by the Soviet Union then, or how was it supported financially?
So probably for some big events which were very much benefiting the Eastern Bloc, there would be more money. For some other things, less money. So it is absolutely not the situation, according to everything I read, that it was like a big amount of money that the Soviet Union was ready to spend. No, they were very careful paying their money. They paid, but they were very careful. Yeah. Officially, the organization was funded through the payments that membership, it was not individual membership. There were women's organizations from different countries, and they had to pay, and it depended how many women they had. And so just through this, because the Soviet organization and I think all the organizations of the countries of state socialism, they claim that all women are members. So, of course, they paid a lot of money. Yes, the Soviet Union claiming that several millions of Soviet women are members of this organization, it was paying more money.
I believe it was thought to sort of be in the pocket of the Soviet Union. Was that true?
The organization was clearly kind of on the Soviet side. I would not say on the Cold War competition, I mean. But there were also many other actors with the time going, and particularly in the period of anti-colonial struggle, many more new actors came in. This is my main finding, that the Federation was doing so many things, and really those from Moscow, they never could control everything, never. But I mean, it was very clear that the Soviet politics on the 10th, the Soviet idea that women in the state socialist countries already have full equality, gender equality, all of it was the discourse of the Federation. So that's why with the end of the communist world, it was the end of, the symbolic end of this organization.
Great. So turning to the Nordic countries' involvement in the WIDF then, I believe you've got a couple of examples for us in relation to important conferences that there were in the Nordic countries, etc.
One of the very important congresses, 1953, the Federation had in Copenhagen. The Federation itself considered it a successful congress. The Congress expressed solidarity with Vietnamese women. Vietnamese women and North Korean women were not allowed to come to Copenhagen. There were many representatives from different parts of the world there, and the principles of equality for women were discussed there. It was a special declaration, and declaration demanded full rights for women as citizen, mother, now I forgot, I think worker also. Women could have right to work, to get professional education, to be educated, to have a citizenship rights. So it was an important congress, and it took place in Copenhagen.
Super, yeah. And there was also one in 1969, as far as I understand it, in Helsinki.
In this congress also, the issues of solidarity with Vietnam, Vietnam were discussed, and also ideas about anti-war campaign, about equality of women. It was also important congress.
Yeah, those sound key conferences, not only in the life of the organization, but also in relation to a lot of other political events that were ongoing at the time. I believe there are also a couple of key people you wanted to mention. For example, Andrea Andrin, who was a Swedish member of the organization, vice president of the Federation for many years, also over the time of the Copenhagen Congress.
Andrea Andrin was a very interesting person because she was participating in anti-war activities quite from early period, from the interwar period. Then she was very active in this group of female activists in Sweden. She never was a communist, member of the Communist Party. She was a very independent woman, a professional woman, medical doctor, who considered that it is important to cooperate on the international level. It is very important to stop the war. Andrea Andrin was part of one of the WIDF important missions during the war in Korea about finding out if the bacteriological weapon was used in the Korean War. And the commission came to this conclusion that it was used, very, very controversial.
Yes, and there were other important women too, weren't there, like Herta Kuzinen, who was from Finland.
She was a member of the Communist Party, but she was the head, the president of the WIDF. She was elected officially at the Helsinki Congress in 1969, and she was the president up to her death in 1974. So it was a period of Federation was particularly successful. It got back its status in the United Nations, which it lost after this all this controversies and scandals around war in Korea. It lost lost its status in 1954 and it got it back in 1967.
When you say it lost its status with the UN, can you explain a little bit more about that? What do you mean?
There are many, like around 100 different organizations, non-governmental organizations that have a status of observer in the ECOSOC, Economic and Social Commission of the United Nations, so they could express their position when important UN documents are discussed. They have, this is about global citizenship, yes? So this are these organizations that are represented at the UN level, and they have possibility to raise their voice to speak. So after the war in Korea, the WIDF lost the status. So it continued to be a transnational organization. I mean, anybody could close down the transnational organization, but it lost its status, and it took. There were several attempts to get back the status. But finally, the organization could get back the status only in 1967.
So just going on with focusing on the UN and the relationship with the UN for a moment, I believe the Federation also played a role in making sure the International Women's Year took place in 1975, wasn't it?
The Federation was a very important actor for proposing, insisting in the United Nations that the International Women's Year should have place. And CEDAW Convention, it was also important organization for discussing CEDAW Convention, which was adopted in 1979.
Yeah, I should just perhaps interrupt you there and say that the CEDAW Convention stands for the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women.
Yes, this organization was using a unity of the women from state socialist countries and women from post-colonial countries, third world countries. So they together were doing important proposals, were coming up with important ideas, and so this was connected to International Women's Year and to CEDAW, yes.
Yeah, so going back to the Nordic countries, at this time in the 50s, 60s and 70s, social democracy was developing in the Nordic region. Can you say a little bit about the relationship between the social democratic movement and this organization, the Federation?
There were a lot of tensions between social democracies and communist organizations. So the whole point of this organization was just to be more radical or different than the social democracy. And so this was the point also when the organizations from many countries, not from Finland probably, because Finland had very special relationships with the Soviet Union. It was more cooperating, more dependent from the Soviet Union. But except with this social democratic welfare model, success in realization of many rights, like Federation, for example, was very early demanding need for kindergartens, for childcare, for maternity leave. So it was very radical when the WIDF started in the 1940s. All of it was realized much better in the Nordic countries than in the Soviet Union, even if Soviet Union would not recognize it, never. So, I mean, the interest of women in the Nordic countries to this organization was lost practically. And in particular with the independent grassroots movement of 1968, Yes, all these representatives of this organization, it was also a generational problem. It's my colleague Elisabeth Elgan, who's a professor in Stockholm University, she was also, she was writing about this new grassroots movement. She was saying that they could not understand each other. It was generational difference also. Because of these two factors, like success of social democratic welfare state and success of radical grassroots feminist movement, the WIDF messages stopped to be interesting for women just in the Nordic countries in the 1970s, with the exception of Finland, where it was a little bit different situation.
So let me see if I've got this right. You're saying that because the social democratic governments in the Nordic countries were beginning to provide women with some of the things they demanded, such as childcare, the incentive to be part of organisations like the Women's International Democratic Federation fell away a bit more. Could you maybe say a bit more about what incentive Nordic women had to be part of the organization, or perhaps not?
So for the Nordic countries, at least for Sweden and Denmark, it was an important period. It was the early period when they could participate. And then it's a very important crises of the Cold War, like, for example, Soviet intervention in Hungary in 1956, Soviet intervention in Czechoslovakia in Prague 1968. Congress of the Communist Party in 1956, the Khrushchev speech about Stalinism and recognizing crimes of Stalinism. All of it had very negative impact on many, many members of the Federation, communists, some communists, some no, particularly non-communists, of course. So as far as I understand, and this I was trying to find more material in Denmark, but unfortunately I didn't find, that many Danish members of the Federation, active members who were participating in organizing this Congress 1953, in 1956, due to both like recognition of crimes of Stalinism and Soviet intervention in Hungary, they left Federation, or at least they stopped to be active. They were not interested anymore in cooperation. So there were several factors that influenced how participation of women from Nordic countries, their participation on low levels, their participation in the leadership was changing. There were kind of social economic factors, political factors, different and factors, of course, coming from development of women's movement itself.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I guess it also underlines the fact that it's wrong to paint a picture of the women's movement all being in agreement during this time. There was, of course, infighting, and not least between communist and non-communist leaning organizations and individuals.
There were very harsh accusations, really, towards what the Federation was calling bourgeois organizations. But I don't know, Federation, of course, was making its message slightly differently, depending from which women they were speaking. I mean, they were speaking a little bit different language in Tanzania and in Denmark. The Federation was presenting itself as the best friend of all people fighting against colonialism, and kind of accusing other women's organizations of buying more liberal, more bourgeois organizations.
This kind of leads on to another thing that you've looked into, which is still relevant today in many ways, which is the leadership of the organization, at least in the early days, was mainly white and European. Could you say a little bit more about this?
This organization was changing so much in the early 1960s. when finally they understood that they have to open up their leadership, open up their agenda for women from the Global South, otherwise they would not survive, because this is the women of the Global South which have the main to say now in this period of many, many new independent countries appeared. So they probably were so radical in their words in the beginning, but they could not do so much. But after that, and not without tensions, internal conflicts in the Federation, when they finally brought in at least part of the activists from the Global South.
So I think we have time left for just one last question. One of the chapters in your book is called Anti-Colonialism, Anti-Racism and Social Rights. And that points to the struggle for independence from a lot of colonial countries. Could you say a little bit about the struggle for independence and how this played out in the Women's International Democratic Federation at this time?
In spite of all this campaigns against the colonial wars for independence, they had some problems incorporating women who had very different visions, very radical visions of the future of the former colonial countries, like who, for example, were thinking that independence is the most important. We now show solidarity with men in order to get independence, and women's rights is a part of this independence. We cannot speak separately about women's rights, African American feminists were writing that this is important, like to take into account the position of the African American women, Black women in general, that this is, we cannot just speak about women's issues. So it was some problems for this federation also to understand it fully. To, I do not know if they really understood it to the end, but at least the development of this organization just supports this general discussion between European feminists who were coming from countries that have the imperial past, and we can say that Russian women who were represented in the Federation, who were mainly representing the Soviet Union, they also have this imperial past of the Russian Empire. So, I mean, and women who are coming from the Global South, it is still this conflict. And of course, I'm sure we can see this this conflict up to today. That's why this is important and interesting to study about this organization.
Yes. So perhaps we should say at this point, you've alluded to the fact that the organization floundered in the early 1990s. But it actually still exists today, doesn't it? Although it's much less active. And there's a link to it on our website, as there are links to some of the other things mentioned in this podcast, if you would like to find out more. So we've managed to get around many political issues of the 20th century in half an hour. So thanks very much, Yulia, for talking to me today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You've been listening to the podcast Nordic Perspectives on the Women's International Democratic Federation in the Knowledge on the Nordics series called An Evolving World, Conversations on Norden. There are many other podcasts in the series for you to listen to, including ones on the Nordic model, gender and branding, and many other subjects. This podcast was produced by the team behind the research dissemination website Nordics Info, which is based at Aarhus University in Denmark. Thanks go to Julia Gradskova from Södertörn University and the university hub Reimagining Norden in an Evolving World, Renew, of which Nordics Info is a part. Thanks also go to our sponsors, Nordforsk.